Okay, welcome everybody. This is the July 27, 2022 morning session of the Portland City Council. Good morning, Keelan. Please call the roll.
Good morning. Hardesty, Maps.
Here.
Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Whelan.
Now I'll turn it over to legal counsel for the rules of order and decorum.
Good morning, commissioners. Welcome to the Portland City Council. City Council is holding a hybrid public meetings with limited in-person attendance in addition to electronic attendance. If you wish to testify before council in person or virtually, you must sign up in advance by visiting the council agenda on the council clerk's webpage at www.portland.gov/council/agenda. You may sign up for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions, reports, or the first readings of ordinances. In-person testimony may occur from one of several locations, including City Council chambers and the Lovejoy Room in City Hall and the Portland Building. Written testimony may be submitted at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. For testifiers joining virtually, please unmute yourself once the council clerk calls your name. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during city council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify, unless otherwise stated. A timer will indicate when your time is done. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Additionally, council may take a short recess and reconvene virtually. Thank you.
Thank you. First up is communications. Item 658, please.
Request of Heather Phipps to address council regarding Bureau of Transportation Safety parking public right-of-way on Southwest Falcon Street.
Welcome, Heather.
She's virtual. Heather, are you able to unmute?
Hello, can you hear me?
Sure can.
I can't hear you guys. Let me figure this out.
Okay.
Okay, I have it. Wow, I'm first. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I didn't get a chance to put together the request the way that I like to. I'm looking for your help. I live in coordinating a couple different departments of the city of Portland. I live near Multnomah Village and in a significant way over the past years. And I live on South Falcon Street, which is one block off Multnomah Boulevard. And there's an interesting kind of intersection where there's a curved road that meets a four-way with only a four-way stop with only one or two stop signs in that area going on. So we've got a yield sign. And what happens is people traveling south will U-turns to kind of get back towards Multnomah. They'll be coming from Multnomah Boulevard. They'll need a U-turn spot and they'll do a U-turn there. And then there's some cars that are angle parking as a presence, which I'm sure used to be okay 15 years ago before this area got busy. And then there's a fence that was built on the public right-of-way. So driveway is right in the middle of U-turns, a curve, one stop sign, and lots of kind of mismatch parking that's happening. Some is parallel and some is angle parking, lots of cars in different directions. It is almost impossible for me to safely pull out of my driveway because of these things. I referred to Bureau of Development Services and that they would look to that, and that review process took, gosh, 3, 4, 5 months, and then included by verifying with another city department that fence that's blocked you to safely reverse, it's about a 7 on the sidewalk, that it was on public property and that another department would handle it. And so I was speaking with, who over at BDS, I think Michael something, I'll have to get the name and follow up. So then they referred me to transportation, PBOT, who would come out and do an assessment, and that is in process. BDS, so I've just got these different departments that are saying it's somebody else's department, and I just would like some assistance in maybe helping to coordinate those, because at this point there's no accountability, and this is a safety issue. And that's it.
Great. Well, Heather, thank you for bringing this matter to council's attention. I will make sure that the commissioners in charge of the relevant bureaus are aware of the situation, and we will try to get someone to get back to you. Thank you so much.
Commissioner Mapps?
Yeah. Oh, Commissioner Ryan.
Heather, this is Commissioner Ryan. Could you please send communication to our office concerning your communication with BDS so we can help track that with you?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for your time today.
Okay, bye.
Thank you, Heather, and thank you, Commissioner Ryan. Keelan, next up we have item 659.
Request of Norman Wicks to address council regarding confiscation of vehicle and resulting homelessness.
I'll speak first, Jack. Is it okay if my son and I speak back to back?
Absolutely.
Okay. This is a matter of a detective. I had already been made homeless by an adult foster care home that I was in, where they were abusing me and stealing my property. So I filed complaints on them. This is during COVID too. And they evicted me out of the house into my car. It was a retaliatory eviction that should not have taken place according to the law. My complaints, 5 of them, went nowheres. So here I am now, living in my car. My son is taking over as my caretaker, living with me in my car. And all we did was try to make friends with the neighborhood we were in, and we would leave every day and come back in the evening to go to sleep, a nice lit up area, nice and safe and well protected. You know, we felt safe there because of the lighting and the cameras everywhere in the new apartment houses. And we did our cooking and stuff in the evening. Now, all of a sudden, the detective comes by, tells us he's taking our car, confiscating our car. Didn't tell me about any charges or who filed charges, not a word, except this piece of paper you put on me. That's, in any event, I can't see any vested interest in why the city of Portland would want my vehicle, okay? Especially since I need it so badly. You know, sleeping out in the cold, I mean, I have to lower myself. My son has to lower me down to the ground every night to go to sleep and help me up in the morning and make my breakfast for me. Under the worst of circumstances, and I've gone just about everywhere a person could go physically with my condition. My son works very hard to push me all over the place, and it's starting to affect him as well. We both have post-traumatic stress disorder for the very same reasons as children. And so all this is here, this is not about nothing but Why can't I have my vehicle back, and why did they take it?
So I'd like to just fill in a few things. So it's been like 6 months that this has been going on. No charges. We typed up letters to the judge and everybody, and nobody responds at all about the car. They just drove us out into the middle of nowhere, as both of us dropped us off. We didn't have any charges. I was told that I can go right back. I went right back to where I was, where they took the car from, and went to sleep. My dad was in the hospital for 11 days. Apparently they drug him out of the police car, injured his hip, put him in a homeless shelter, then had to drag him back into another patrol car and take him to a hospital, drag him. He just injured his hips really bad. All over the detectives saying that he wanted to use our car as a drug sting car. And that's why he was taking it.
It took my son 11 days to find me again. He couldn't find me. We were separated for that long.
All my computers, my cameras, our car got burglarized while we were in it. Windows broken, and so I went and got equipment so I could film the people. Apparently you have a really bad case of car burglaries, and the police are refusing to come out and take reports.
We called in.
And we had cameras so that we could record what was going on and turn it in because it happened to us. And so now all of my equipment is gone. It's all been paid for, but the police officer was saying things like, well, we suspect him of doing car burglaries. Well, everything in my car has receipts for on a Visa. Thank you. May my father fill in for the rest of the time.
Can we get a copy of this segment from somebody?
Video of the...
This particular segment.
It's on YouTube, so if you go on YouTube, you can go there.
I urge everybody here to go to my site, Norm Wicks at YouTube, where you will see videos from the time they kicked me out of the foster care home up until present, of some of the things that have been occurring to us while I've been homeless. My son has been assaulted. He received a blow to his back with a crowbar, and he got broken ribs on the side here, lower broken ribs from a big boulder that some homeless guy.
We had 15 minutes to get out of the place that my dad was staying in.
Anyway, thank you very much, members. And I was hoping Mr. Wheeler would be here so that he could hear this. He can undo this all by himself. Give him back his car. It's as simple
and
as
our
that.
Property, please.
Thank you, members. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we did file a federal lawsuit, too. Yeah. So it's
and I don't want to sue the city.
We have a federal lawyer.
I would rather not sue the city. I would rather sue the officer who did this.
Mr. Wicks and Mr. Wicks, if you could pause for a moment. It sounds like you've been interacting with the city for a while on this. I'm aware of your case because I know you were in council a couple of weeks ago. If you are willing to reach out to my office, and frankly, I'm just right around the corner, you can go in, talk to a staff person, and we'll look into this matter further.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate
you
coming
in. Thank you very much, Mr.
Mayor. You have a nice evening.
Take care.
Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you. And Keelan, can we please go to 661?
President, may I also read the title for 660 just so we can
read it into the record? Oh, sure, of course.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Request of Norman Wicks Jr. to address council regarding confiscation of vehicles and resulting homelessness. And then 661, request of Patrick Cashman to address council regarding city ethics policy and deed restriction on Sears property for homeless camp.
Welcome, Patrick.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Starting now. So my name is Patrick Cashman. I'm a current resident of Southwest Portland. I'm going to provide a quick recitation of some facts to set some context for my comments. Each of these are individually verifiable. One, let's see. All right, Dan Ryan was informed by the GSA that placing a city-facilitated homeless camp at the Sears site violated the deed restrictions on that property. Two, the deed restriction was the only condition our actual cost placed upon the public benefit conveyance by us, the taxpayers, on our multi-million dollar taxpayer gift to the city of Portland to satisfy the city's detailed and explicit request for the site to use in support of emergency management. Three, Dan Ryan was informed by GSA his planned use for the property as a homeless squat violated the deed restriction prior to Dan Ryan ordering the occupation of the property by All Good Northwest, a city contractor operating under city instruction. And those squatters forcibly displaced by the city and All Good Northwest from the now rehabilitated and crisp and clean protected former homeless campsite in Old Town. Dan Ryan, an employee and representative of the city of Portland, ordered the occupation site in willful and knowing violation of the deed restriction. Title 1, Chapter 103 of Portland City Code defines the city code of ethics. That code of ethics was part of your initial onboarding for your current jobs and part of your annual retraining requirement as a condition of your continued employment. In that city training, you're required to attend and participate in the accompanying city reference pamphlet titled Code of Ethics Explanations and Examples for Elected Officials, City Employees, Appointees to Boards and Commissions, and City Volunteers. You are instructed for Rule 1, under leadership, city officials obey all laws and regulations. Explanation, law-abiding behavior by city officials sets a good example for the public to respect the law. Rule 2, city officials do not exploit loopholes. Explanation, none provided. I assume the drafters thought that one was so self-explanatory, no explanation was required. I filed an ethics complaint for Dan Ryan's ethical lapses on this matter through the city's designated process. In response, the city informed me, and I quote directly, the code is an aspirational document. It is not, in our view, a set of hard and fast rules with an enforcement mechanism. So, on to my comments. I can't reasonably expect you to do anything that's not in your particular self-interest. So let me try to portray this in a way that is you can understand how democratic practices and basic civil rights are actually beneficial to your self-interest. Title 42 U.S. Code, Section 1983, provides for civil action for deprivation of rights, blah, blah, blah. Every person who under any color of statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, etc. Basically, if a government official deprives you of your civil rights, you have a right of civil action. As many are aware, qualified immunity is changing. The protections you have become accustomed to may not be there in the future, and I believe I actually have 20 seconds left. The previously unassailable walls of qualified immunity are starting to crumble, and you may not be able to rely on the protections you've become accustomed to in the future. And as a final reminder, please let me point out that governments that refuse to obey laws they don't like are not engaged in civil disobedience. They are engaged in tyranny. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Cashman. Keelan, can we go to 662, please?
Request of Danny Rukin to address council regarding support for a ban on the sale of fur.
Danny, we can't hear you. You're still muted. There you go.
How about now?
Great.
All right. Thanks. Okay. Hi, all the commissioners. I'm going to play something. I'm going to do something a little different because I'm Danny Rukin and I'm a Portland resident. And wow, there's some weird back stuff. I'm so sorry. Anyway, I'm a Portland resident. Can we start again? Do other people hear that or is that just me? I guess it's just me.
Yeah, I think it's just you. I'm sure, Danny, we can give you a couple of seconds. You're coming through loud and clear. If you're, you might want to even just take out your earbuds if you're going to deliver a monologue.
I'm actually not going to. So really quickly, I'll try that. Okay. Let's take them out. So I'm Danny Rukin. I'm a Portland resident, and I'm also with Compassionate PDX. It's a grassroots group of volunteers dedicated to creating political change in favor of non-human animals. And I'm here once again to please ask you to meet with us, talk to us about what it is we're actually asking for regarding passing a ban on the sale of fur and foie gras in Portland. I'm going to actually use this time, 2.5 minutes, to play you something from New York City Council. These are about to play. There's a resolution, I think it is, or ordinance 260, and it's the recognition that animals are sentient beings deserving of our protection. And that's gonna be Carlina Rivera. That's about 30 seconds. And then less than 2 minutes by Robert City, New York, Robert Holden, talking about getting a ban on 573, resolution 573 on a ban on horse carriages. The reason I'm going to play this is because I want you to see that other city council members are going to bat for animals. So is it possible for me to screen share? It looks like I can.
Yeah.
I'm about to. Here I go. And just stick up your thumb if you're able to hear it when I play it. Appreciate your time. And here we go. Okay.
In recent years, the council has done amazing work on animal rights, and this resolution memorializes our city what we all come to know. Animals are worthy of dignity and humane treatment. It also calls on the state to pass legislation, as in Oregon, which recognizes the state's responsibility to animal welfare. I always say how we treat animals is a reflection of our society, and I hope my colleagues will support this resolution.
Today, I introduce intro 573, which would prohibit the operation of horse-drawn cabs in Central Park, effectively banning horse-drawn carriages in New York City for good. Whether it was passing legislation creating the an ACC shelter in each borough, or to creating the heat index for horse-drawn carriages, to establishing an office of animal welfare, increasing animal cruelty reporting, the banning of trafficking of wild birds, this has come together in the past to do great work on animal rights issues.
It's time
once again to step up for the defenseless. It's time to advocate for the horses who have suffered for far too long. We are here today to declare this city horse carriage free, and I need you, my colleagues, to help us achieve this. This is 2022. It's not eight. We should not have horses serving humans. Greedy desires. We should not allow drivers to make a buck off the backs of these poor horses. Other cities in Europe, Asia, the Middle East, and Mexico have already done this. New York City needs to be among them, and we need to be the leaders of this in the United States of America. The drivers will be able to work more with electric carriages. They won't lose time due to the heat index or inclement weather as they do now. The jobs would be prevailing wage and would have great benefit. Let's all work together to end the misery of these horses finally. Let's end horse carriages in New York City once and for all. Okay. Anyone who feels that horses have to serve man in the 21st century is out of touch. I thank the advocates who have pushed for this. And I especially thank my colleagues who have signed on to this bill as a pre-intro sponsors. Please sign on to intro 573 and help us again do the right thing by our animals. Thank you, Major.
Okay. Let's see. Stop share. Okay, so all that to say, thank you for your time. Were you able to hear it? Because what's going on over here? Okay. Thank you. I just want to stress once again, other city councils are the council members are going to bat for the animals. They're putting themselves out there. They're not animal rights people. So I just please ask you, please do the right thing. Meet with us. We've been hearing since 2019. There's no bandwidth. It's not a priority. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny. Keelan, I believe that wraps up communications for today. Is that correct?
It does.
Great. So now, colleagues, we will go to our first time certain item. This is item 663, time certain 9:45.
Accept the Technology Oversight Committee quarterly report.
Colleagues, I'm pleased to introduce this report by the Technology Oversight Committee. The committee is tasked with providing oversight on the city's technology-based projects. The OTC is overseeing three significant projects right now. We have the Office 365 project, we have the body-worn camera project, and we have the records management system project. Here today, we have three guests, Ethan Sermo from the Office of Management and Finance. We also have Jeff Bayer, the Chief Technology Officer and Director of the Bureau of Technology Services. And we have Jimmy Goddard, committee member representing Commissioner Mapps. Welcome, Ethan, Jeff, and Jimmy.
Thank you very much. Good morning, commissioners. Like you said, my name is Ethan Thermal. I work for the Office of Management and Finance on the communications team. This is the second quarterly report for the Technology Oversight Committee for 2022. Today, we're going to be hearing from Jeff Baer. He's Portland's Chief Technology Officer and the Director of BTS. He's going to present the committee's report to you. After Jeff speaks, committee member Jimmy Goddard will present the opinion of the committee. Now, right now, we are overseeing three priority projects from the Police Bureau: the Office 365 project, the body-worn cameras project, and the records management system project. Currently, the Office 365 project is the only one is being prioritized, but when we have heard from the body-worn cameras and records management system projects a couple months ago, they gave us introduction reports in February. So with that said, I'll hand things over to Jeff.
All right, thank you, Ethan, and good morning, Commissioner Mapps, Commissioner Rubio, and Commissioner Ryan. Pleasure to be here in person this morning. And as indicated, I'm Jeff Baer, the Director of the Bureau of Technology Services, and with me is Dr. Jimmy Goddard, our Technology Oversight Committee representative for Commissioner Mapp's office. And we're here to present the Technology Oversight Committee report to Council covering the second quarter of 2022, and also provide updates that are not necessarily captured during the reporting period, and also here to answer any other questions you may have regarding other technology issues. The first project on the report is the Police Bureau's implementation of the Microsoft Office 365 product and suite. Our quality assurance firm, Case & Associates, continues to provide their independent project assessment working with the project team and is reporting monthly to the TOC. You'll note the project schedule is still in yellow, but this is not unusual as we continue our discovery phase work and research phase that we're currently in. And once we move into the implementation phase of the project, this will change. And this is a complex upgrade, as I've mentioned in the previous reports, that we maintain a high level of security due to the criminal justice information requirements that are in the system, and also the project team continues to work on the tenant synchronization issue. The TOC also heard the post-project implementation report for the integrated tax system. As noted, the revenue division did a really excellent job throughout the project implementation, and this will now roll out for the TOC review, so you won't see this in upcoming reports. And although not part of this report, at our July meeting last week, we had a presentation from the Bureau of Development Services staff on the permit system improvements that they've been working on. I believe Dr. Wolf Penfold is actually on the permit task force. Really good discussion we had. So Jimmy, I'll turn it over to you for comments to provide your observations and insights on these projects.
All right, thank you, Jeff, and good morning, commissioners. Again, my name is Dr. Jimmy Goddard, and I'm the representative for Commissioner Mapps. Currently, the TOC is reviewing the three projects that Ethan and Jeff mentioned. The one project that has been before us has been the Office 365 project that provides the police with the ability to collaborate with the rest of the city via Office 365. Over the past quarter, the Office 365 team has completed a sustainment plan. The budget and scope have remained green. However, due to delays with Microsoft and Quest, the schedule of this project has presented some concerns and also delay, and is currently yellow. Based on evidence received to date, we, the TOC, do not have any major concerns to report besides the project schedule. The body-worn camera project has not had any reports presented to the TOC over the past quarter, as the PPB is prioritizing the Office 365 project. As of the last quarter, the TOC reviewed the request for proposal in March and provided feedback to the project team. Vendor demos occurred in May, and the city plans to conduct a pilot test in the fall of 2022. The last project in record is the Records Management System, RMS project, and also the TOC has not had any reports from this project over the past quarter, as the PPB is prioritizing Office 365 project and also the body worn camera project. The RMS project aims to upgrade the Police Bureau record management system, such as files will be pushed to the cloud for storage. The project will have a more clearly defined schedule upon kickoff. So at this time, the TOC doesn't really have any rating or assessment on this. So this conclude our TOC report. before the council. We thank you for listening, and we will be returning in October and hopefully with more details on all three projects. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Is that the end of the presentation?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to report, to present the report, and here to answer any questions.
Great. Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this?
No one signed up.
Colleagues, do you have any questions?
Sure.
Well, I don't know if I have a few. I have a couple. Good to see you. Nice to see you live. And thanks for mentioning that Guilford is on your committee and gave an update on the permit improvement task force that I chair with Commissioner Mapps. Appreciate that. I am confused on this 365 project. I find every time I've had to oversee any sort of big technology advancement, it always takes longer than you would like. Is the timeline been delayed?
No, the timeline hasn't been delayed. So if you think about breaking a project into two different phases, one is sort of what we call the discovery phase. So we're going through and doing a real in-depth review of all the requirements so we get that project implementation phase nailed down so that those timelines are actually the more important piece once we move into the implementation phase. Right now, we want to take the time to make sure that we get everything right.
I think anyone in the public, which I'm a part of, and then have more information once I became on council, was surprised to know that the police don't have that access to collaborate with the rest of the city, is how I hear it. So I'm glad it remains a number one priority. It really does seem to be quite important. The other topic that you brought up is something that a lot of Portlanders are anxious to see implemented with the right fidelity. And so when I heard that you had vendor demos, how many vendors did we observe?
I believe they were down to two final, and they've awarded or sent the notice of intent to award to one firm. So it was just one demo. So they've gone through the competitive solicitation process.
So it's already down to two finalists, but one is in the position
in the demo
to be
phase.
Awarded. Okay. And did any members of your committee attend these demos?
Yeah, Wilf Pinfold was able to attend one of the demonstrations.
Okay, I think it'd be really helpful for the public to hear his perspective on what he witnessed.
Sure.
So I think I was anxious to hear that, and that's why I raised my hand.
Sure.
So he's the person that could provide that information?
Yep.
Okay. Let me look. I know just enough about these topics to want to ask really open-ended questions, so. And you are taking on some really big assignments for the city, for the services of our people who live here. Let's see. I think that's it for now. Anyone else have any questions?
I have a couple, and I might have missed it in the presentation. But do we know when the 365 project will wrap up?
So the discovery phase is supposed to wrap up over the next couple of months. And then once we move into the implementation phase, we're thinking, I think the last I saw was somewhere Q1 of 2023 is somewhere in that time frame.
Okay, great. And do you have a sense of what other major city technology projects are in the pipeline?
I do.
All right, great.
In fact, I know you've asked recently about our Technology Executive Steering Committee.
Yep.
We just met this past week. We were going through just a charter review to make sure that really fits with the what I'm calling post-pandemic COVID timeframe, because we started it pre-COVID, and we've got eight different bureau representatives with one of the smaller bureaus on the team right now to look at it. I've been working with the Chief Administrative Officer Mike Jordan to look at that. I presented our top six priority projects. This one's obviously the number one project. We're also working with the Bureau of Emergency Communications on their CAD upgrade to CAD upgrade.
Thank you.
And then we've got some of our fiber infrastructure is a very large project. We need to have the bandwidth in order to have all these projects, because they're all consuming bandwidth on our fiber infrastructure. And trying to remember the other ones. I think those are the top ones at this point, and I can certainly share the whole list.
We'd love to see the list at your convenience. So if
sure.
I'll have my staff reach out to you, or vice versa, that would be
absolutely
great. Colleagues, I have no more questions.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up.
Sure, please do.
Yeah, is Axon the vendor who's okay?
Yes.
And so Wilford's the only person on your committee that observed that demonstration.
Yes.
Okay, and where is that in the process?
I believe they are moving into the next couple of months to actually doing a couple more demonstrations. And then I think they're going to be in contract negotiation for several months.
So the city hasn't made a decision on this being the vendor yet?
They did. They issued a notice of intent to award to Axon.
Are you guys confused? Did we know this? I just thought there'd be more updates in the public, didn't you? Okay. You're the messenger right now.
Yes.
So I realize there was an awkward pause as we looked at one another, but it really helped for you to be transparent about the fact that you had oversight of this and that one of your members attended. And I think not just me, but others on the council would love to get their perception. Commissioner Rubio.
Yeah, I just want to echo what Dan or Commissioner Ryan has brought up. And I too would love to dig a little deeper on this. So I don't know if it's appropriate to come back to council or if we do it in meetings outside of this venue, but I think it needs some briefing of the commissioners as well.
Maybe if I could offer a suggestion, I could reach out to the Portland Police Bureau project manager, Tammy Mayer, and get her and work with her on providing a written update to each of your offices, if that's, and kind of give you the first status of where that project is. If that's okay.
I think that's a step, but we know that this is something that has so much community interest and so much engagement on this topic. So it's very important for us to remain very transparent as we take each step. And so I am grateful that you are here today to give some perspective on that, and that you had one member of your committee doing the oversight. And I think we do look forward to an update from the police group.
And the ability to ask questions.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's all. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Director.
Thanks.
Certainly.
Thank you, and great dialogue right there. This is, any more questions? If not, this is a report. I will move the report. Can I get a second, please?
Second.
Thank you. We have a motion from the presiding officer and a second from Commissioner Ryan. No more discussion. So, Keelan, please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Director Baer for being here. Thanks to the BTS team and also the Oversight Committee for their complex work on multiple projects. I also want to thank them for volunteering all their time to review these projects. We greatly appreciate the time that they put into this work to make the city more efficient and better serve its residents. And I also just want to thank my colleagues for the dialogue that we had and look forward to learning more about the procurement. Thank you. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Director Baer, for being here. And also, always good to see you, Dr. Goddard. And yes, thank you for your service. I appreciate the report. I appreciate your focus. And I look forward to the next report where hopefully we can hear that our police are able to coordinate communication through 365 with the rest of the city. That's very important. And I appreciate your transparency about the body-worn camera vendor. And that gives us a chance just to ask more questions as we make a purchase that's very important, the one that has a lot of public interest. And I appreciate your transparency in the communication we just had. So thank you. I accept the report. Bye.
Maps.
I want to thank everyone who presented today, and I want to express my gratitude for the Technology Oversight Committee for the very important work that they do. I'm delighted to see these projects remain on track. I vote aye, and the report is accepted. We have a time certain coming up at 10:15, but we're a bit early for that. So what I'd like to do now is go to our regular agenda. Keelan, can you, so let's do the second reading of item 665.
Authorize one or more competitive solicitations for professional, technical, and expert services price agreements in support of Portland Parks and Recreation Capital Improvement Program for a total amount not to exceed $17,900,000.
This is the second reading. Is there any further discussion on this item, colleagues? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Rubio.
Colleagues, last week, Teresa Green from Procurement provided council a detailed and extensive overview of their process leading up to this ordinance and their plans for moving it forward. Parks also has demonstrated a clear commitment to equity in contracting, and this opportunity will continue that commitment. I very much appreciate the work that will go into this and look forward to seeing its results. I vote aye.
Ryan.
Thank you, Commissioner Rubio and Director Long, for your leadership and for everyone who worked to ensure these contracts are equitable and inclusive. Today, as we experience yet another extreme heat event in Portland, it's really clear to me how important our parks and infrastructure is, and what a relief it will be for many Portlanders today. And so it's very timely as well. The overnight cooling shelters opened at Charles Jordan, for example, and at the East Portland Community Centers. I just want to put that on the record, how grateful we are for the Parks Bureau for being a leader at a time of crisis that we're experiencing right now. And also the misting centers that have been opened. And those also are parks at Portland Community Center, Glen Haven Park, Harney Park, Knott Park, Lentz Park, and then again at Mount Scott Community Center. Just want to put on the record that these cooling shelters and misting centers are all saving lives this week, and we hope that all Portlanders will take advantage of them. And thanks again, Commissioner Rubio and Director Long, for your leadership at a time of crisis. So I know I got a little bit off the topic on this, but I wanted to be relevant to the week that we're currently experiencing. I vote aye.
Maps.
I want to thank Commissioner Rubio for bringing this item forward. I vote aye, and the item passes. Colleagues, our next item is a time certain at 10:15. We're 3 minutes early. Can we adjourn for,
you can take a recess
for 3 minutes? You can refresh your coffee, and then we will come back here at 10:15. Back in. Let's come back into session, and we will go to our next time certain item, 664.
Accept the Bull Run Treatment Project's 2022 annual report.
Colleagues, every year the Water Bureau appears before this council to provide an update on the Bull Run Water Filtration Project. Today, this council receives the Bull Run Water Treatment Project report for 2022. The Bull Run Treatment Program consists of three major infrastructure projects, which are designed to ensure that Portland's water supply is safe and abundant for generations to come. The projects which are included as part of the Bull Run Treatment Program include, first, a new and improved corrosion control treatment facility. Second, we are planning for the construction of a new water filtration plant, which we need in order to comply with federal drinking water regulations. And third, the Bull Run Treatment Projects includes field studies for the pipelines the Water Bureau will need to install to connect the new water filtration plant to our existing water system. The Water Bureau and I are delighted to report that despite the challenges posed by both inflation and COVID, the Bull Run Water Treatment Projects are on track and on budget. Today, we have three staff from the Water Bureau to tell us more about the Bull Run Treatment Projects. So now I have the great privilege of handing the floor over to Gabe Solmer, Water Bureau Director Jody Inman, Chief Engineer of the Water Bureau's Engineering Services Group, and Benita Oswald, Communications and Outreach Coordinator for the Bull Run Treatment Facility. Welcome, Team Water.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. What a lovely introduction. And good morning, Commissioners Rubio and Ryan. I am Gabe Solmer. I am the Portland Water Bureau Director. And it is my honor to join you with, as Commissioner Mapp said, Chief Engineer Jody Inman and our Communications Coordinator, Benita Oswald. Really, it's a dream team of people that I get to work with. And while you're hearing from the three of us today, they're literally dozens of dedicated professionals who have made the achievements that we're about to share. Can we bring up the slide presentation? Perfect. All right, and we can move to the next slide. All right, so as Commissioner Mapps introduced, we're here to provide a brief update on the Bull Run treatment projects. Filtration project at the Water Bureau, and it's one of the largest in city history. It's of scale, but also in importance. The projects that we will go over today will have the health and economy of our community and shape our future for decades to come. So today we'll provide some brief highlights. I know you have a busy day, so some brief highlights from the written report that you received. Lots more information in that written report. And Jody and Benita will touch on three projects. So improved corrosion control treatment, the filtration pipelines that make up the Bull Run treatment projects. We'll talk a little bit about information on scope and schedule and budget and community. And then finally, as Commissioner Mapps alluded to, we'll talk about what's coming up in the year ahead. So what are those challenges that we face and what we're doing to meet them head on and overcome them? Thank you. So just to orient us today, I'll remind you that we are very fortunate to have a protected watershed that provides the first layer of defense for our water. And our water is treated with chlorine and ammonia, and as well as it's amended to make it less corrosive to home plumbing. And the first project that you'll hear about today is the improved corrosion control treatment facility, which, and I'll just admit, we are not super creative namers over here at the Water Bureau. It is corrosion control treatment, so pretty straightforward. That facility came online in April of this year, and you'll hear a little bit more about that success, as well as some of our successes in how we built it and who was involved in that. Protections, as you can see, we're not a filtered system yet, so we are one of a handful of systems nationwide which is not filtered. So that's the work, is to add filtration by 2027 to protect public health and comply with safe drinking water standards. Two projects associated with filtration, the facility itself, and then the pipelines to connect to our existing. So with that, we can move to the next slide, and I will turn it over to Jody Inman, our chief engineer, to explain just a bit more about these projects.
Thank you, Director Solmer. Thank you, and good morning, council members. My name is Jody Inman. I'm the chief engineer of the Water Bureau, and I'll give you some details as well as provide that overview of where the projects and the program currently stand. As has been mentioned, there are three projects within the program. The first one is improved corrosion control treatment. Facilities with improved treatment tools to help us reduce the risk of lead exposure at customers' taps, which I know the council has heard a lot in the past year or so. This project was completed on schedule and on budget. I think we're all proud to say that this project is online, compliance deadline, and it is having a positive impact on the. We have a very large distribution system, and it will take time to see the full benefits of these changes. And we're going to make sure that the changes are having the positive impact we desire. In place to measure those results with our next full sampling in the fall, followed by the end of this year. So this is a critical tool that will allow us not only to make these improvements now, but also as necessary to meet water quality goals. This project, we are also very excited with the equity components and achievements that we were able to make with this project. I do separate some of those equity achievements into the contracting as well as with our contractor and the subs, as well as the project. We have far exceeded all of the city goals in both of these areas, both of the workforce. We had over 54% COVID participation in contracting, which was
right.
COVID firms. And the gray font on the left may be a little hard to read, but just 2.25 million of that went to an American firm. And only 300,000, or the pinkish line, went to a Caucasian-owned firm. So, area Also, from a workforce status, we far exceeded both apprentice and journey participation. For one of the key points that we are taking with this is we have a lot of the same team members that are larger filtration projects that we have with the facility and the pipelines. And to build on what we have learned and what was successful in this project in education and bringing that forward into our much, much larger future projects. So the filtration facility itself is a 135 million gallon per day conventional filtration facility. Also on schedule with it will be meeting its compliance agreement deadline of submitting the design by September and October of this year. Also within our current program funding and budget, and that is through some significant cost management and other efforts over this last year where we identified $40 million in value engineering. Of this past year for the filtration facility has been really been advancing the design and escalation in cost as we advance that design. And as I'm sure all of you know, this has been when it comes to supply chain and cost escalation. And then a significant component of the work in this year has been preparing for our land use submittal to Multnomah County. It has been fluid and changing as cost estimates have reflected current economic climate, which has driven us to make these significant value engineering and cost management measures. And even with these revisions and a lot of hard work, the project team is still on schedule to that deadline. Some of those key value engineering revisions centered on meeting the project goals and those community goals, which we hold true in all of our decision-making, including efficiency and phasing some of the work. Big ticket items included raising the actual facility. There's a lot of dirt work associated with this project. Reducing the sizes of some of our structures without safety, deleting or phasing some of our redundancy items, and simplifying the project where possible. Slide, please. So this is the current site plan for our filtration facility. One of the key components for selection of this site was just a lot of space. One of the reasons that this site was selected was because it is 95 acres in size. That is critical as it provides us the space not only to build the infrastructure that we need, but also buffering around it. The site design was, we've spent a lot of time working with the community as we developed this site design, and we have gone with what we call a compact campus, trying to put as many of the facilities and built improvements as close together as possible so we can maximize the space around the site or around those improvements to berming or landscaping or other efforts to help screen the facility from the neighboring community. Spent a lot of time with the community working on what those built improvements will look like. I want to point out a couple of other little factors about this site is over on the, to my right, corner, you'll see that there is a large section of the site where we currently don't have any surface improvements. And I think Bonita will touch on a little bit an opportunity area that we use for some other important community goals. And then in the bottom of the site, you'll notice a little rectangular cutout with a couple of circles on it that's currently owned by Pleasant Home Water District. And those are Pleasant Home Water District tanks. As I talk about upcoming actions in this future year, you will hear again about Pleasant Home Water District and something we'll be potentially coming back to you with. Next slide. So one of the program goals that not only reflects the Water Bureau's personal goals, Director Solmer's goals, but also the community and I know the council's is the approach to sustainability. This is one of the design factors that we are keeping on the site. And the program have gone above and beyond what the city currently requires. We are looking at an approach, which is more than just the current requirement for a LEED certification. It's not LEED. We are pursuing LEED certification with a net zero energy use for our administration building, the administration facility that is shown on this current slide. But we are also going to be the first project of the city that is looking to seek Envision project certification. And Envision is a certification process that considers sustainability from a holistic approach, where the project is sited, to consider its impact to the environment, to the natural environment, to the community, that the things like on-site stormwater management, reducing impervious surfaces. So it's really focused whereas LEED is focused on the building. We are very excited to be pursuing that for this project. Seen in the media recently is the support by the chief engineers for using low carbon concrete. We do have a lot of concrete on this project with our basins and facilities, and carbon concrete in those basins and structures. Not only for the city, but also with that holistic sustainability approach is the and other stormwater management. And as you can see in front of our administration building, we have a very area to maximize capturing that stormwater and treatment on site. Next slide, please. The third project within the program is the construction of over 35,000 linear, or approximately 35,000 linear feet of seismically reinforced pipelines and one new intertie. In a connection facility that connects our existing pipes to our future or our existing pipes with our new pipes and other interconnection opportunities that give us maximum flexibility and operational controls by allowing us to move water between those pipes as and then also for maximum operation and other maintenance efforts. This work is also on schedule with to be complete at the end of this year. It is not required to, as part of the Oregon Health Authority compliance. So you'll note it is slightly different than the filtration facility itself, but it is, this project is also within our program budget and funding, and that needs significant cost management efforts, including identifying over $70 million in value engineering as part of that. The big effort on the pipelines, besides advancing the design, has also doing additional investigation along the pipeline routes. That includes a lot of geotechnical borings, which is what you see in the picture here. You don't see pipes, you see the borings of where we're going to put the pipes. Better inform our design and understand risks that we may encounter as part of that design. And then significant effort on hydraulic modeling to confirm capacity we can deliver to the plant with our existing pipelines. Dive into how we're going to construct these connections and new pipelines while continuing to deliver water to town through the same pipes. Next slide, please. So this is the current pipeline plan. I'll want to point out a few things on this site. On the bottom of the slide, you'll see a some purple text and a purple dashed line. This is areas. That is the Multnomah County, Clackamas County boundary, which runs along the southern portion of our planned filtration facility. We have two different sets of pipelines that are feeding the facility. We have what we call a raw water, which is the untreated water that will bring deliver water from our Bull Run the new filtration plant. And then we have finished water pipelines, which will be taking water from the new filtration plant and connecting it to our existing conduits and for delivery into town. A portion of the value engineering cost management that we did on this project was a reduction in the amount of our raw water line. Here, that what we are currently planning is a connection from Lusted Road up to our filtration facility. That is the connection from our existing conduits to the new filtration facility. Modeling has indicated that we are able to provide the capacity to the plant through those. And as part of that, then we have phased into the future what we want to construct approximately 9,000 more lineal feet of pipe, sort of down to the south through Clackamas County, through properties and other environmental areas. So what we has reduced the cost for the work, but it has also reduced risk associated with land use. It's reduced impact to the community by a reduction of the amount of construction, individual properties, but also just in the overall length of construction, within a very rural area, which doesn't have a lot of widely, will impact, reduce the amount of truck traffic. And then I also want to point out one more thing in that most of the planned pipes, we put them in the right of way. And this is key to minimizing not only risks associated with land use, it also, and then it was also done with the intent to minimize impacts to our neighbors. Next slide. So this one doesn't have as many color graphics, but for in our filtration projects, the key component of our equity program right now for both the pipelines and the filtration facility has to do with technical expert services, so our consulting contracts. We have $1 million currently contracted with COVID certified firms. The program initiated and been running for quite some time, a capacity building support program. We talked about this a little bit last year. Providing those COVID firms the support they need and customizing that support to what they need. It could be that them to understand the expectation of deliverables, to helping them develop a business plan for growth. We have 6 firms right now currently participating in that support program. And we have a city goal of 20%, currently around 23%. We will recognize that the diversity of some of those firms is still a growth area for us. As we start to talk more as we're getting into our construction phase, that we have there to continue to expand that portfolio. As we move into construction, even though we don't expect to be putting any projects out to bid until next year, we are actively engaged with the community. And that has a lot of, you know, just to be able to talk about the types of work so they know the types of work that are coming up, the timelines for that work, and best to help the community prepare to be able to support this project as a chance to grow. We are the first large project in the region, as I understand it, that will be implementing the workforce equity agreement that was, I think, just recently signed and procurement took to council in February. Very excited about the goals and the connections that are included in that agreement. Say scaling up to a project of this size, it will brings. It's a very large project in a somewhat remote area with a lot of competition with other going on. But I'm excited about the connections, and we are actively again working with the labor community to try to maximize the results that we can. So hopefully we come back to you in 4 or 5 years with this on the improved corrosion control. Next slide, please. With that, I want to turn it over to Bonita Oswald, and I want to thank her and the team. These are the folks that regularly engage with all of our community. Not so easy. So she has been the face and helped us really share. So with that, Bonita.
Thanks, Jody, and good morning, commissioners. As Jody mentioned, my name is Bonita Oswald, and I'm the communications and outreach lead for the Bull Run Treatment Projects. And we're committed to keeping the community informed and involved. We continue to publish monthly e-newsletters. We share project information on our bill inserts and our water quality report. We produce videos that are shared through our Water Bureau's social media platforms. And we provide briefings to a variety of community, environmental, and cultural groups. And we use this information, the community values that we learn, to inform the project decisions. And you may recall last year, we started public opinion research with some surveys. And this year we completed this work with a series of focus groups. This allowed us to dive deeper into Water Bureau services, the project, and affordability. It was important for us to hear from customers who may be struggling to pay their water bills. So 2 out of the 4 groups we interviewed were customers eligible for our discount programs. Overall, the groups indicated that they have a positive view of water quality and Bureau services, and they like to keep it that way. So they also value the resilience that our projects will bring. not a surprise, but they are also valuing affordability. So they encouraged us to continue to expand our financial assistance programs and to be more transparent about the programs we offer. We started a pilot program we call the Water Stewards this past fiscal year. And this is a group we convened of liaisons from 9 different historically underserved communities. And the concept is to partner with active and respected individuals within different communities to help them learn about our projects. And then in turn, they share what they learned with their networks and provide feedback on how we can do better. Among this diverse group, we learned that there are diverse perceptions of how tap water is. And it's a lot of that's based on their previous experiences. When you come from a place where you can't trust the tap water, it's difficult to believe that it can be safe. And I think working with trusted individuals within the communities can help us build that confidence. They also let us know that they would like to see financial assistance beyond single family homeowners. And they prefer to hear information from about complex issues from people who look like them and speak their language. So as we move forward with our work, we will incorporate what we're learning to help support the Water Bureau's commitment to advancing partnerships and education and communication, and to better engage the community in ways that are inclusive and culturally responsive. Also, as part of this commitment, we are continuing to develop our relationships with the Indigenous community. We are working with our partners at the City Tribal Relations Office to provide project updates and site tours to tribal nations and learn from them how we can best honor Native and cultural life ways. We continue to meet with our Urban Indigenous Engagement Circle. We started last fiscal year to ensure that we're implementing their guidelines in meaningful ways. And I'm excited about the progress that we're making with Camilla Consulting. It's a Native-owned firm that we've been working with to develop a summary of opportunities to integrate Indigenous traditional, ecological, and cultural knowledge. That's that area that Jody had pointed out a little bit earlier. There's about 15 acres there that we think could be a potential for some future work there. With this approach, we try to have our outreach with a holistic view so that it not just benefits the Bull Run Treatment Projects, but also the other Water Bureau programs and city communications efforts. So all this work has been documented in a series of reports that we have, and we're happy to share those with you. Or we can also provide your office with a presentation with more details. But for now, I'll turn it back over to Jody to get more into the project schedule and budget.
Thank you, Vanita. Next slide, please. Sometimes I feel like there should be a drum roll before this slide, you know, let's get to the nuts and bolts. Current estimated program costs. We had submitted a WIFIA funding application, which identified a program cost of $1.483 billion. And that is what has been included in our rate cap forecasts that we have shared. In 2021, we came back to you and we were still within that $1.483 billion. And there has been some shifting of costs from contingency into estimated capital construction cost. It is a similar story this year. We are still within our current, that's the good news. And I will say that, you know, through that, those value engineering and cost management measures that we have taken this past year, we're focused on continuing to deliver what we had heard was important to both you, the council, and the community and the neighbors, but challenged ourselves internally to think about how we're going to operate and fund this facility, knowing it's a critical component of delivering this project successfully. We were able to take those cost management and value engineering and maintain some project contingency. Even though there is a reduction in the amount of contingency and an increase in the estimated construction costs, have that contingency to handle unknown unknowns, escalation. There is some contingency built into those estimated capital costs. It is getting leaner. However, that is also consistent with what tends to happen as you project from a more vague planning into redefined We also have the benefit of having had all of our contractors on board with us. So we have been doing cost estimating and both with our designer and our contractors. And they sort of, I understand what some of these other cost management structures are. And so we feel that these are fairly solid in where we think it go. What we can't do is predict the future. Cost management efforts, the value engineering that we did has been pretty lean. There are not a lot of opportunities going forward for further management in that way. So just a bit of a warning, if this year continues to be on trend with what we saw in this past year, tighter going into next year. But for now, the good news is that hard work is keeping us in a position to continue to have adaption and flexibility going forward. So I'm going to breeze through this one really quick. We've talked a lot about schedule. The key component here is we're on schedule and we are finishing our design and we're moving into those last. Next slide, please. So it may have been somewhat of a quiet year to you all for the Bull Run Filtration Project. It was very busy for us, but you are about to have multiple opportunities to engage with us even more on these programs. For one, design and into construction, and that there are key components to that is while we do have our alternative procurement CNGC contractors on board, we will with the request to council to fund the guaranteed maximum price that we've been doing also in this area when it comes to our cost management strategies and also to maximize our equity participation. And one guaranteed maximum price for the entirety of the work. We that with probably two guaranteed maximum prices. The first focus on the dirt work, which we can move forward. And the second phase would be for the balance of the filtration facility. This is consistent with how the STEP project has moved forward. This phased approach will allow us to get. It's hard to put together a cost or to predict whether you'll have the labor if you're a COVID firm for another 3 or 4 years. So by phasing this work, it allows us to get better cost certainty to the unknowns that might get put into our prices and to provide more opportunity for our equity contractors and workforce labor to all of the other work going on in the region. We are also have had our pre-application. We'll be submitting our land use permit. This does not come before you all per se, but we do expect to have robust participation from the community regarding this application. And we'll have the opportunity to come meet with you in your offices to give you some more detail on the topic that would come up as part of that process. There is, our application is over 1,000 pages long with reports to support our findings and that land use. There is a lot to cover if, and we'd be happy again to come meet with you to go over more. Assessments that are required, particularly along the pipeline. So we will be coming to you this fall with our ordinance. We will also likely be coming to you with intergovernmental agreements with Pleasant Home Water District about work around on our site directly adjacent to their facilities and some potential changes to our wholesale agreement as changes to the wholesale agreement with the city of Sandy. As always, we are dedicated to continuing our cost management strategy and committed to maintaining affordability, including maximizing how we're using that WIFIA loan project affordable. And with that, I'll move it on to questions. And I just want to thank all of you for your participation and the community and again to the project team that for Gabe and Bonita and myself to sit up here. Where the success of this project is and the positive direction it's heading.
Great. Thank you for that presentation. Before we get to questions, Keelan, do we have any public testimony on this?
No one signed up.
Okay, thank you very much. Colleagues, do you have any questions on this? All right, Commissioner Ryan.
First of all, thank you, Commissioner Mapps. This is such a big project, and thank you, Director Salmer. Jody, I want you to know there are times where my nonverbal wasn't probably very pleasant. It's because your connection would go in and out. And so my nonverbal was reflective of that. Just want you to know that. Okay. And thank you, Bonita, for that presentation. Oh, I actually was, there's several things that popped into my head. One is congratulations on your continuous work with outreach. I noticed the apprenticeship numbers especially were very high. And I've learned in my previous job how important that is. Of course, you hope they become journey folks and then become subcontractors and general contractors. That's the evolution of the restorative justice in that lane. So I want to compliment the data, and that was refreshing transparency, especially the focus on Native American firms. That's restorative justice at the heart. On that note, when you're doing outreach, it made sense that you were reaching out to groups that are on financial assistance programs. I didn't hear, was there any outreach specifically to Indigenous communities, to the Native American communities? I didn't know if that was, oh, so you're nodding your head. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so the work that we did with the Indigenous community, there was actually three different things that we've been doing. So we had started last year what we call the Urban Indigenous Engagement Circle. And so it's a group of community members that are urban, live in the urban area, and they've been providing us feedback on the work that we're doing, and they gave us actually a guidance document, where we developed a guidance document based on the work that we've done with them. It was a series of meetings over several months, and then we just recently met with them again to follow up on some of the work that we've been doing based on their guidance. So some of the things that they were interested in was ensuring that we are bringing more Native people into our workforce and highlighting Native people in our work. And so we did a video that's highlighted that firm that we were talking about, McDonald Excavating, that put so much work into the improved corrosion control. We are hiring an intern that can help us to develop communications that incorporate more of the Indigenous language into our communications. So those are the sort of things that we've been doing with the Urban Indigenous group. We have that iTech group, that's a Native owned firm that's leading that effort to look at how we can use that traditional and ecological knowledge on our project. And not only just for this project, but also we're looking at future projects. How can we work with that, work into other projects and hopefully even with the city. And then the final part was with the tribes. We've been reaching out to the tribes. We actually just had a site tour with the Grand Ronde, and they're providing us some great feedback on things that they would like to see.
That was wonderful to listen to. And I'm happy to note that you're working in closely with the Tribal Relations Office.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just before I go and turn it over to another commissioner, your IGAs, Pleasant Home Water District, can you inform me and others what that entails, what jurisdictions? I assume they provide water for some of the cities in East County. I just don't know, or in Clackamas County.
Yeah, it's more of a rural water district that serves a smaller number of customers in sort of that rural Multnomah, Clackamas County.
Like some unincorporated sections of the county?
Yeah.
Okay. That will be fascinating as that moves forward. And then the other is with the City of Sandy.
The City of Sandy currently has a contract with us to purchase raw water, untreated water, and we will be revising that. They have since decided that they would like to purchase fully treated water from our filtration facility. So there's IGA for that agreement, as well as some improvements needed to infrastructure for that transition.
See, that was a moment where I lost a few words and I was leaning in thinking that would help me understand what you're saying. No, that's okay. We all deal with it at home when we're working from home. I'll stop there and turn it over. I see you have your hand up.
For sure, Rubio.
Thank you. So congratulations first on a tremendous amount of very important work. It's really exciting to see things at different stages of development. I'm just curious about how has COVID impacted the work, the timelines over the past couple of years? Are they still impacting? And then my follow-up question to that is what does your workforce look like right now? And do you have, are you fully at capacity? Where are you at in that? I'm just curious about that.
So do you want to take that one?
Sure. So from a COVID perspective, we were able to successfully build the improved corrosion control. So that was evolving as COVID was evolving. And so the site protections and safety that were implemented as part of that. We were able to manage that. As far as the design and the other process, I would say that, you know, where we are more seeing that impact of COVID just with supply chain, and then also with, you know, I think everybody, I don't know if it's COVID or what's coming out of COVID, it's work, but just a need for, folks to be interested in the type of work, engineering, that supports a project like this. Our workforce, designer, heavy right now. We had challenges with keeping some of those, however, the special projects are a once in a lifetime opportunity for staff. So the staff that are there have been very engaged, and it's also a high priority. So currently I think that group is almost at full capacity. And even with some of those transitions in staff, they've been able to goals and stay on schedule. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Thank you.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thanks, Commissioner Mapps, or Council President Mapps. This report states, here's what I want to say. First of all, especially in a week like this, we're just reminded how fortunate we are to have Bull Run. I mean, I can't think of a more precious resource that we have as a city that we have to protect. And so this investment is so important. And so I wanted to start off by saying that. It also feels like the clock is ticking. Like when I looked at the timeline, I think everyone wants to go fast forward on this, but are we really making sure that we are providing protection from fires, landslides, large storms, all the other risks that just seem to be an onslaught? And is that one of the main reasons why we must press forward as quickly as possible and make sure this investment moves forward? And do you think that we're really covering all the big risk that we can foresee? So do you feel confident in that, Commissioner Mapps and the team?
I'll kick that over to staff.
I can start, and then maybe we'll ask Jody voice on the call. I think to answer your question just as definitively as I can, yes, I think this project is extremely all of the risks that you talked about. We don't know what's going to come next, but we do know that we are facing unprecedented climate issues, increased fires, all of the things that you mentioned are risks that we have looked at as part of this project. So yes, I am very invested that this project is successful. I do want to say that I think it is important to do this right, as well as to do it at all. So I do slow downs, as Jody talked a little bit about, in terms in order to do this work, in order to do the community outreach that we have talked about and that has gotten us this far, we really want we're approaching the work that we do appropriately. So yes, there is that. There's just that balance of we want to we want to do it right. But yes, absolutely, we'll want to get it done so that we are from those risks. No guarantees, but this is a project or a set of projects that will make us much more resilient in our system. Want to add to that?
I just want to echo that and say, yes, this project, what is most important is that as we continue to see more and more unknown in our way, having more tools in our toolbox, especially one as effective as this, is critical to our continued ability to continue to deliver water consistently and reliability and clean drinking water. So may not solve everything that comes before us, but a very valuable tool and will be critical for many of those things that you have mentioned. Someone mentioned.
Great.
Thank you. Colleagues, any other questions or comments? This is a report. I'll move the report. Can I get a second, please?
Second.
We have a motion from the presiding officer and a second from Commissioner Rubio. Keelan, let's please call the roll.
Rubio.
I want to thank Commissioner Mapps for his leadership on this and for bringing this forward, and also thank Director Solmer, Bonita, Jody, and the Portland Water Bureau team for this report, but also for the great work that is taking place to protect Bull Run and to provide our community with safe, fresh water. It's exciting, again, I'll mention, to see the projects that are reaching final phases or continuing to develop or beginning or finishing up their design and heading into construction. So I want to really appreciate the team for their ongoing, and also for their ongoing community outreach efforts to keep customers, neighbors, and other stakeholders informed. You really do exceptional work here on engagement. And so I really want to lift that up, and particularly as the conversation happened with Indigenous communities, and our residents do take notice about engagement. And so appreciate that and want to hold that up. And I also look forward to the next update, and great job, everyone. And I vote aye.
Ryan.
Yes. That just happened. Sorry about that. That was my opportunity to crack myself on connection issues. So I just want to say thank you so much. That was a great dialogue. I appreciate this update. Again, I can't think of a more important resource that we must covenant right now than the protection of our water supply. And I really did hear you, Director Solmer, that we have to do it right and we have to be persistent and press on. And I couldn't agree more with Commissioner Rubio's comments about how important it is and how great of a job you're doing and must continue to do with engagement with all of those that have been marginalized in the past, but especially our tribes and our Indigenous community. It's a real big opportunity. I enjoyed the conversations. Thank you for the open-ended questions. I personally want to go on a tour of Bull Run itself and then also keep track of this. I think as long as you're in a position like this, we want to provide support and oversight to see this through. And that is really behind all the questions, is to partner with you in a supportive yet critical way to make sure we get it right. So thanks for your openness today. And I am definitely delighted to hear updated reports and see the good data coming in terms of your outreach and engagement, and definitely building a workforce that looks much different than it did in the past. So I vote aye.
I want to thank the Water Bureau for the presentation today and your great work on this incredibly important project. I also very much appreciated the dialogue that we had on council on this very important project today. So I appreciate that. I vote aye. The report is accepted. I believe that completes our business for this morning. Keelan, is that correct?
That's correct.
We are adjourned.